30 minutes. I didn't get a damn thing.
Lady, psycho cop was the role I was born to play.
Brewer walked off, and Court asked, "What's the prisoner's condition?" Zack said, "I was ready to get nasty, but I put my hand on her knee as I was moving around. She acted like I was made of lava." Court had noticed the same thing. She apparently doesn't like to be touched at all. Zack shrugged.
"There's not a scratch on that woman's body, but she's not gonna be okay. All the scars I gave her are on the inside. They ain't never gonna heal. But I may have just saved 5,000 assholes by fucking her up for life." He shrugged again. "And I can live with that."
Jason gave Janice Wan a shot of an anesthetic that would have her out cold until a CIA team could arrive from Edinburgh to collect her, and soon after a U.S. Army helicopter landed out of the darkness, picked up all the Americans and Zoya up from the safe house, and flew them north to the Highlands. Court knew there was no way he and the other two assets of Poison Apple were going to get to go to the castle itself, so he was surprised when it came into view on a cliff above Loch Ness. They overflew the massive white building, and as they came in for a landing, Brewer revealed that Court had been correct in his assumption. She spoke into her headset's microphone.
"You three aren't getting on the premises. Five Eye security is too tight. We'll put you up in a safe house we have in Inverness, 10 minutes out. Jason is cleared to go to the Five Eyes conference. He was coming anyway as a gopher for Matt, so he'll leave with me. I want you rested but ready to move as soon as we find out where Zakharov is staging for the attack."
Brewer and Jason climbed out of the helo, and it took off again immediately. 20 minutes later, it dropped Zack, Court, and Zoya off on a street north of the city of Inverness. They walked for 20 minutes before finding a cab, which took them to their safe house on Fairfield Road, just west of the River Ness. The accommodations were a simple 2-story building on a residential street. Court and Zoya ended up upstairs in a room together, and even though Zack had the apartment downstairs all to himself, he almost immediately came upstairs and opened bottles of beer he found in the refrigerator for all three. Zoya asked Zack if he'd found any vodka around the house, and he told her he hadn't. At this time of the night, it was the beer or nothing. Zoya took a long swig, then said,
"So, you two work together, I take it?"
Court said,
"Zack and I have a little history together. Some of it is good."
"And the rest?"
"He tried to kill me," Court said matter-of-factly, and then added, "Twice."
"And you shot me," Zack replied.
"Once. So far," Court said.
Court finished his beer and went to the bathroom to take a shower. His aches and pains were unabating, and he thought a painkiller and a hot shower would do him good. When he was gone, Zack and Zoya drank beer in silence, till Zack said,
"Good old Court. Hell of a guy. But you know there's no future, don't you?"
Zoya pretended to look disinterested.
"Why do you say that?"
"Dude has issues. He will never get off the hamster wheel. He lives for the righteous grind of fighting for what he believes in. He'll keep kicking in doors, halo jumping onto targets, and smoking the worst of the worst till that day his number comes up. Might be tomorrow, might be next week, might be 10 years.
He chugged beer, then shook his head.
"Nah, it won't be 10 years.
"And you? You're planning on quitting all this to work in a hardware store so you can raise a family?"
"No, lady. I love the work almost as much as Six does. But I don't have this chip on my shoulder about fighting all evil everywhere all the time. I punch in, do what my country tells me to do, then punch out."
He smiled at her, raised an eyebrow.
"I'd be home for the wife and kids, should that be something you're into."
Zoya kept looking at the big man with the beard. Finally, she said,
"You're hitting on me?" "Sorry, it kind of seems that way, but I can't tell for sure."
"I'm just saying, a woman needs a man."
"That's in the Bible, isn't it?"
"Actually, I picked it up from a porno."
Zoya shook her head in disbelief.
"Court needs better friends. I'm not as good a person as he is. I know that without question, but I wouldn't hurt him. I would be there for him just like he's been there for me."
Zack shrugged.
"I'm always there for him.
When the assignment you're on calls for you to be.
The rules of the job, sister. If Six is my partner, we'll take down armies. If Six is my target, then I'll put a bullet in his eye."
"Always there for him," she said dryly.
"Life's a bitch, girl."
Court stepped back into the living room to grab his phone, then looked them both over when they went quiet.
Zoya said. We were just talking about you.
God, I wish you wouldn't.
Zack overstayed his welcome, but finally took the hint to go down to his room, and Zoya pulled out a medical kit and opened it, preparing to put fresh bandages on Court's hand when he got out of the shower. He sat next to her and placed his arm gingerly on the kitchen table. Court said,
I need a trigger finger and a thumb to wrap around a grip if I have to shoot left-handed. Otherwise, immobilize the hand.
Zoya said, That's crazy.
Just do it, please.
She complied with his wishes, using a splint from the medical kit, wrapping him, then taping everything securely. As she worked on this, Court glanced at the medical equipment. It was a robust collection of medicines, wound care supplies, even heavy tranquilizers and drugs to counter poisons or drug overdoses. Hardly a normal first aid kit you'd find in a typical residential home. Court said,
I wish someday you and I could do something normal.
Zoya continued wrapping his hand with tape. Like what?
I don't know. What do normal people do? Catch a movie, I guess?
Zoya laughed. We're in a movie, Court. Just not the kind I want to be in. Soon his hand was mummified, save for his fingers and his thumb. He opened and closed it, wincing while he did so. She saw his discomfort. You can't tape the pain away.
I know.
What's recoil from a rifle going to feel like?
She asked. It's going to suck.
He looked up at her.
This is all going to suck.
Not all of it, she said. And she stood and took his hand. He followed her into the bedroom. Did the shower make you feel better?
I'm a new man, he said as she began to undress.
Brewer had specifically ordered them to rest, but this was another order Zoya and Court decided to ignore. They made love passionately. Difficult for Court with a broken hand, but he was motivated, and he found a way. When it was over, Zoya joked with him. Did I hurt you? Court laughed, and then his phone buzzed on the table next to him. He started to reach for it with his splinted left hand, but then caught himself and reached out with his right.
Yeah,
Suzanne Brewer said. I need to talk to Anthem. Confused by this, Court said,
You have a target?
No, still working on that. Anthem. Court handed the phone across the bed. Zoya listened quietly for several minutes, asked a few questions that didn't tell Court anything about the matter being discussed. She thanked Brewer, then hung up the phone and sat up. The light from the lamp at her bedside table showed him tears in her eyes. My father tricked my brother into helping him with a non-sanctioned intelligence operation. My brother was accidentally radiated with polonium-226 in the process. He died because of my father.
Christ, Court thought. What does one say to that? I'm very sorry. What about your mother?
Zoya shrugged. Assassinated by the British. I understand their reasoning.
That's a harsh thing to say.
She worked for a foreign intelligence force, and her work was designed to directly damage the interests of the United Kingdom. That was her job, and she died for it. The British who ordered her death were doing their jobs as well. She shook her head. No, it's my brother's death I can't accept. He wasn't part of this world. My brother wasn't like me. Wasn't like my dad or my mom. He was like you. Court was surprised by this.
What do you mean?
He was innocent.
You see me differently than I see myself.
Zoya wiped tears away. That says more about me than about you. You don't know you're the last good guy around.
Court most definitely did not know that, but he dropped it for a more important matter. This information doesn't change anything. If your father is found, Zack and I are going to take care of him. Not you.
I want to be the one to kill my father. For Fio.
Court shook his head. No. That can't happen. You'll spend your whole life regretting it.
If you think that, then you don't know me as well as I give you credit for.
I think you don't know yourself as well as you give yourself credit for.
You are furious right now, rightly so. And you want revenge for your brother.
But you will be damaged if you go through with it. Trust me.
This is because I am a woman, you are a man, and you think it's your job to protect me.
No, you don't need me to protect you. It's because I know what it will feel like if you do it.
Did you kill your father?
Court shook his head. No, but I've done less and have been damaged by my actions. I'm just trying to save you from that.
Zoya gave a half nod. Okay, you're right. She leaned over and kissed him.
Court sensed she was just trying to end the conversation. He said, going alone after your father will either get you killed or mess you up for life. Just stay here tomorrow. It'll be taken care of, and we'll never have to talk about it.
Zoya's reply was firm. I said, fine.
Court knew to drop it immediately. They staged a firearm on each of their nightstands, then turned out the lights.
Exhausted and under the effects of the hydrocodone, Court fell asleep quickly, but not Zoya.
Zoya stayed awake for hours. Chapter 57. Just after dawn, Zoya woke Court with a freshly brewed cup of coffee, kissed him, and told him she was going to take a shower. Court climbed up out of bed and sipped coffee as he walked into the living room. Standing there in his underwear, he looked out the window at the placid residential street below.
This would be a nice place to live, he thought. Here, with Zoya. This house, this city, this country. This life.
He was still hurting, and he'd be hurting for a while. The throb in his left hand commanded his attention, though it wasn't the only ache in his body.
But all in all, he was better. He realized the sex had cleared his mind and made him the happiest he'd been in a long time. He thought about taking a pain pill to make him looser and more ambulatory, but decided against it. Zoya had done wonders for him physically and mentally.
He checked his phone and he saw a text from Zach saying he was going to go scout a location for the helicopter to pick them up that wouldn't draw too much attention.
He said he'd be a couple of hours, but would be reachable at all times. As the shower began running in the bathroom, Court took a moment to look over a map of the area on the coffee table here in the safe house. He found Castle Enric not too far away at all, and then looked around it at the undeveloped countryside. That church with an airstrip they were searching for could be anywhere. But he was sure the Five Eyes would have a lot of people looking for it now, and he hoped they'd get a hit. After a few minutes, the sound of the running water made him realize how much it would help his beaten body if he climbed into the shower with Zoya. He felt a wave of exhaustion hit him, rather suddenly, and he thought the water might just re-energize him. He finished his coffee and stepped into the bathroom, and immediately he could tell the shower window was open to the cool morning, because the room was only partially steamed up, though the vapor was growing.
"You're too little to hog all the hot water," he said,
and he walked towards the curtain to open it, but he stopped when he noticed something on his left. There, on the medicine cabinet mirror, someone had written something with their finger that the slowly rising steam was just now starting to reveal. The first words he made out quickly, "I love you." He smiled at this, reached for the shower curtain, and then read the second line of the smeared note. "And I am so, so sorry." Court cocked his head and pulled open the curtain. Water pounded down into the empty bathtub. The window there was open, and it was just wide enough for Zoya to squeeze through. Court turned for the door, but the movement made him dizzy suddenly. He put his hand on the wall, continued moving forward, and then stumbled. He made it out into the little hall of the living room, used the walls to keep him up for a few more feet, then fell down onto the floor behind the sofa there.
"What is happening?"
And then it hit him. He'd seen inside the medical kit here in the safe house when Zoya patched up his hand. It was full of prescription pain meds, but he'd also noticed a small liquid vial of M99, an animal tranquilizer the CIA had altered to make safe for humans. It ensured 2 to 6 hours of hard sleep to whoever took it, and was even used as a non-lethal weapon as well as a tranquilizer for darts. Court realized Zoya had drugged him so he couldn't stop her from going after her father. He wanted to be angry, to shout, and he wanted to pull his phone to call Zach or Brewer, but his eyes shuddered and closed before any of this happened, and he put his face down on the wooden floor and fell unconscious. Zoya raced west through the morning in a stolen minivan she picked out of a driveway 4 blocks away from the safe house.
She'd only walked that far because she needed to find something she could boost easily with the tools that had been left in the upstairs apartment closet for use by CIA officers working there, and was thankful enough to spot a Toyota Sienna van old enough to be an easy mark. She was in it and driving in 3 minutes, and not one of the neighbors already up this morning had seen or heard a thing. All night long, she thought about it. Sleep eluded her because of the stress and strain, but eventually she'd become convinced there was only one possible solution. She'd told herself she had to do it. From the moment Court fell asleep, Zoya knew she had to be prepared to find a way to get out of there and go for her father on her own. She couldn't let Zack or Court kill him. She needed to be the one to do it herself, but not until after confronting him about the death of her brother. While Court slept, Zoya took his phone, put earphones in, and turned off the ringer. The hope had been that Brewer would call with the location of her father's staging area for the air attack of Castle Enric. And her plan had worked. At 5:30 a.m., just as the first rays of dawn hit, Brewer called and asked to speak to Violator, but Zoya told her he was too drugged to talk. Reluctantly, Brewer explained that a high-flying Royal Navy jet had spotted an abandoned church on a hill 22 miles west of Loch Ness. A few hundred yards away, the figure of a small aircraft could just be made out from its concealment under a tarp and some brush.
Another overflight with thermal imaging confirmed a half dozen or so men in defensive positions in a graveyard in front of the church.
Zoya wrote the coordinates down and was told the ground branch team at Castle Enric was being mustered to attack the location, but that Romantic was already out scouting a location for the Hilo to land. Violator would wait for a call from Romantic, then meet him at the pickup point for the helicopter to join the raid on the church. Brewer informed Anthem, in clear and unambiguous terms, that she was disallowed from leaving the safe house because of the personal nature of the opposition.
The men would take care of things without her.
She deleted the evidence that Suzanne had called from Court's phone, and she made coffee. While it brewed, she went back into the bedroom and stood over Court, watching him sleep. Even in the low light, she could see the discoloration on his face from the beating he'd taken. His hand, bandaged to the wrist save for his thumb and fingers, lay on the bed to his left. She had felt sickened by what she was about to do, but at that moment her anger and need for revenge were even stronger than her love. She felt like the worst person in the world for this, but she also felt committed to her task. There would be no stopping her. She was, after all, her father's daughter. She put a few drops of the M99 tranquilizer in Court's coffee, then positioned her clothes and a few other items in the bathroom. She kissed his bruised and tired face, handed him his coffee, and then lied, claiming Suzanne Brewer had not called. After that, she went into the bathroom and turned on the shower. She thought he'd be down at least 3 hours with the tranquilizer, and according to the GPS on her phone, it was only 40 minutes to her father's staging area. She pushed down on the pedal of the Sienna now, and increased her speed, determination, and shame coexisting in her consciousness. 45 minutes later, Zoya stood at the bottom of the hill below the church, her arms outstretched to show that she was unarmed. Although it was raining, breezy, and in the upper 50s, she'd taken off her raincoat and even her gray sweater to reveal a black sports bra, showing the men who would inevitably have her under rifle scope that she was unarmed. Slowly, she began walking up the rain-soaked hill, her sweater held in one hand. A pair of men in ski masks appeared out of the tall grass in the unkempt cemetery in front of the church and ordered her forward in Russian. At the low stone wall, they commanded her to drop to her knees and then lie flat on a patch of pasture trimmed short by a flock of sheep grazing on the hill. She complied. They stepped over the wall, and she was searched. She was pulled to her feet and walked towards the entrance to the sanctuary, and she put her sweater on as she did so. Zoya noted the gear and stature of the men walking alongside her. Immediately she could tell these were not Bratva gunmen from Moscow's Sonetsevo neighborhood, nor were they like the other security forces she'd seen around Fox and her father. No, these guys were not in military uniforms, but they sure as hell looked like the Spetsnaz men she'd worked with in the past. Looking up into the church windows, she saw a pair of snipers, also in ski masks,
Again, their positioning, the gear she could see, their professional demeanor, it all told her there was a sizable force here protecting her father's operation that the Americans knew nothing about. This suddenly terrified her. She knew a raid on this location would be coming, perhaps within a couple of hours. 10 or so American operators, even highly skilled ones, would not be able to take this place from the platoon of Spetsnaz men with high ground and fortified positions without suffering devastating losses. Fyodor Zakharov sat at the small wooden table in the church canteen. He looked on at his daughter as she was brought in and placed in a chair in front of him. He had a cup of tea for himself, but offered his daughter nothing, even though she shivered in her wet clothes. He ordered Fox and Hines to give them the room, but he allowed two mercenaries to stay. They leaned against an empty bookshelf behind Zoya, providing security in case she tried something stupid. Finally, he relented in his hard stare, then asked one of the men to grab a towel from the kitchen, and when he returned, Zakharov handed it over to his daughter himself. She began toweling off her face and hair without thanking him for the gesture. His voice was low, soft, but intimidating.
"My little Zoyushka, I was so pleased you escaped the laboratory with your life. But it was foolish of you to come here.
And you are a fool for being here. Did you not think you would be found when the Americans captured Dr. Wan? You're working with the DPRK? Was that to reflect responsibility on them when this was over?"
"That's exactly what it was. Your mind works in the strategic realm as well as the tactical realm. That makes me proud. All the years of instruction I gave you."
He didn't seem proud. He sounded as if he was about to have her shot. Zoya glared at him, and her face reddened. Under her shirt, her stress hives positively glowed.
"Why did you come, Zoya?" Zakharov asked.
"I am here, Father, to provide you with the intelligence you need to make a reasonable decision."
"Go on."
"They will be here soon, and they will end your operation, destroy your plans."
Zakharov seemed completely unfazed by this, which confused his daughter.
"And even if you do make it out of here, do you really think there's any way in hell you are going to get a crop duster within a half mile of Castle Enric?" Juan talked. "They've already put snipers on the roof. They've already got helos in the air circling for 10 miles. Attack jets ready to swoop down from 20,000 feet. You're done."
"So you came to ask me to just go quietly off into the sunset? To concede defeat and forget it?"
She didn't answer. Instead, she said,
"I learned something else last night. You lied to me. The British didn't kill Fyodor, Father. You did, by your foolishness."
General Zakharov made no reaction to the charge.
"Am I wrong?"
The big bearded man sat there quietly for several more seconds. Finally, he said,
"Fyo was the fool, Zoya, not me. I invited him to the UK during a short break from his studies. I had doubts he'd come at all. Our relationship had been fractured for some time. But he agreed. A colleague of mine gave him a small case of chocolate bars, a gift for me. You know, and Fio knew, that I've always loved Ilonka chocolate better than this Cadbury shit the English seem to be addicted to. The case was all packaged up neatly, and my colleague told him to be sure I received the entire box. But you know Fio. He held a grudge against me, did little passive-aggressive things to spite me all the time."
Zoya said, "He held a grudge because you were hard on him. You tried to turn him into something he was not. The only thing that kept Fyo from running away, or slitting your throat in your sleep, was that I came along. You saw that you could train me. You could turn me into what you wanted Fyo to be. You were just as hard on me. The difference was that I had the drive, the desire, that he did not possess. That was not his fault. You hated that you didn't have the son who would honor you by following in your footsteps, so you settled for your daughter."
Zakharov looked out the window at the misty morning.
"You simplify 20 years of our family."
"It wasn't simple," she said. "But, Fyo, you should have left him out of this life. He wasn't like us. He wasn't evil."
"Evil? You think we are evil?"
Zoya nodded softly and looked at the floor.
"It's in our blood, Papa. You, Mother, me. She looked back up at him. But this, what you are doing here, it's wrong. It's for the wrong reasons, and it won't even succeed. Please, let's leave together. We can leave the country somehow, go wherever you want, even back to Russia. I'll give up my life if I can stop you from doing this.
Zakharov looked at his watch, and Zoya noted the action. He said, You're absolutely right. I should have left Fyo out of all of this, because he was unskilled when it came to the simple task of bringing me my polonium. He came to see me at my house in Knightsbridge, and when I asked for the chocolate, he handed me a handful of loose bars. He told me he ate one of them on the plane. There were 10 bars, and 4 were secretly marked to indicate that they contained the isotope inside the triple-wrapped lead foil. He ate one of the 4. Zoya's face reddened more, and tears filled her eyes. She had loved her brother more than life itself, and she still did.
So, Zakharov said with a wave of his hand, Fyodor Fyodorovich was more than just incompetent. He was bloody unlucky.
He was untrained.
Zakharov shouted, his first show of real anger.
What bloody training do you need to carry a fucking box of chocolates on a fucking airplane?
Zoya looked at her hands a moment, then back at her father, her face suddenly a guise of malevolence. Without warning, she lunged at him, over the table, her hands grasping for his throat.
The two mercenaries behind her were slow to react because her action came without warning, but they finally dove onto her and tackled her off the table and to the wooden floor, pressing her 140-pound frame hard under the weight of 2 200-pound men, each covered with 35 pounds of guns and body armor and gear.
Fox and Hines rushed into the room now. The Englishman grabbed Zoya by her hair and yanked her up and away from the two Russian mercs, her feet leaving the ground. As he shoved her hard against the kitchen counter, he reached for a butcher knife in a block there, but a gunshot froze her as well as everyone else in the room. Zoya looked back over her shoulder.
Her father stood by the table with a small Makarov pistol in his hand.
He had fired into the ceiling, and now he pointed the weapon at his daughter.
It doesn't have to end like this, but if you don't stand down, it will end for you, right here, right now.
He looked to Hines, who stepped up to the brunette, and he grabbed her by the back of the neck. Zakharov said,
British intelligence forced my hand when they killed your mother. Do I regret using my son in my operation to exact revenge? Of course I do, every day of my life. But I am not to blame for his death. It was the British who put me in England with retaliation on my mind. They are the culprits, and today, finally, they will pay for what they've done. The entire Five Eyes will pay.
Zoya snorted an angry laugh. The sky above the castle is a no-fly zone. Your crop duster will be obliterated. Still, Zoya realized her father seemed unconcerned about this. He said,
We will be leaving soon, before your friends arrive.
I've lost visibility about what the Americans are doing. My man on the inside of the CIA has been captured, but my contacts in British law enforcement and the police will alert me the moment any movement to conduct an operation against me has begun.
Zoya suddenly realized her father had miscalculated. Hanley was using one team from Ground Branch and 2 Poison Apple assets.
As far as she knew, he was not in contact with British or Scottish authorities at all about the attack he had planned, so there was no way her father's contacts could warn him when it was on the way.
She didn't reveal any of this. Instead, she just repeated herself, Your plane will never make it to its target. When she said this, her father holstered his gun under his jacket and turned for the door.
It doesn't have to, darling. If you think we told Dr. Wan the full scope and breadth of our plan, then you underestimate your father's intelligence. She designed and built the weapon, but I alone wrote the plan for my retributive strike.
Zoya's heart sank. He had something else in mind, not the crop duster. The Americans knew of no other plot against Castle Enric. If she didn't find a way to warn them, she worried they would think the danger was over when the plane went down. Chapter 58 Court Gentry's eyes opened slowly, and he found himself staring at the back of a shit-brown sofa.
It took a moment more to remember his last thoughts before he went out. And even before he had a clear idea of where he was and what had happened, his body began reminding him about his myriad pains, located from head to toe. His left hand was the worst. It throbbed and hurt like a small car was driving over it back and forth, over and over. He then realized why he'd awakened just now. A banging on the front door seemed to shake the entire building. Court's first inclination was to get back into the bedroom and grab his pistol. But he just made it up onto his forearms when the front door came crashing in 15 feet away. Zack Hightower flew into the living room behind it. He'd slammed his shoulder against the door to smash it, which gave Court the impression he'd been knocking for some time before going to such extremes. Hightower looked around the room and finally saw Court, still on the floor, still bleary-eyed and disoriented. The jarring sound of Hightower's voice penetrated through the cobwebs in Court's brain.
"What the hell you doing, you lazy fuck?"
Court's words were garbled from the drugs.
What are you doing?
Coming to get you two. Brewer's been ringing your phone off the hook for an hour. Where's Marina?
Who?
Oswald, where's the Russian? In the shower?
The water still ran in the bathroom down the hall.
Fucking women.
Court was still coming too.
She's gone. I guess she drugged me. She's going after her dad.
Zack approached, knelt down closer.
How the hell did you let her drug you?
Court did not answer. Instead, he struggled to sit up without touching his left hand against anything, and Zack saw his predicament.
I got you.
He pulled Court to his feet. His knees were wobbly.
What did she dose you with?
M99, I think.
Cold-blooded bitch.
I told you that you had to watch her.
I'll be all right. In a minute.
He grabbed Zack's arm and pulled it up, then looked at the watch on Zack's wrist.
8 a.m. She's been gone over an hour.
Zack said, about a 40-minute drive time from here to Zakharov's lair. If she went straight there, she's on scene now.
Shit,
Court said. Zack snorted.
Face it, Six, your girlfriend's got daddy issues.
She went to kill her father.
Bro, what did I just say? Langley's now hiring fucking Russian spooks who want to kill their dads, who themselves are bent on killing thousands. Who in the fuck is driving this clown car of an intelligence agency anyway?
Court rubbed his eyes with his good hand.
What now?
Zack sighed, annoyed.
More dipshittery from Brewer. She's sending a car to pick us up to take us to the Ground Branch Hilo. Jenner is assembling his team at a staging area close by for a hit on the airstrip and the church, and Brewer wants us to ride along.
Ride along on their hit?
Court looked at his hand.
Zack said, between you and me, sometimes I wonder if Suzanne doesn't really love us.
Court smiled weakly, then headed to the bathroom to take a cold shower to wake himself up. 30 minutes later, Court and Zack stood in a steady, cool rain in an open field next to two helicopters. One was a UH-60 Blackhawk, possibly the same one he'd flown there in the night before. The other, however, looked similar to a Blackhawk, but it had special design features that indicated to Court it was something new, elite, and highly classified. He was pretty sure he was looking at one of the newer models of direct-action penetrators, souped-up Blackhawks that supposedly gave off the radar cross-section of a bird and flew faster, longer, and much more quietly than a regular Hilo. Outside the Hilos, the 7 junior men of Walt Jenner's team worked on assembling gear, while Brewer alternatively talked on her phone and then spoke to Jenner, who was standing over a map lying on a large black Pelican case. To Court, Jenner seemed to have a lot of questions for the senior CIA officer, and the bearded paramilitary team leader clearly wasn't pleased with the answers he was getting. There was a heavy mist in the air in addition to the rain. Visibility was no more than 100 yards. Court wondered about flying in this soup, but told himself the pilots of the high-tech bird could probably fly it upside down and backwards through conditions worse than this. He and Zack had been out of the conversation. No one had spoken to them since they'd arrived, and other than a nod between Gentry and Chris Travers, the only man on the team Court knew personally, there had been no recognition by the Ground Branch team of the two new assets. Finally, Zack cleared his throat.
Suzanne, what's our role here?
Walt Jenner held a hand up.
Hightower, we haven't figured out what our role is yet. We'll get to you.
To Jenner, Brewer said,
Your role is exactly what I said it was. You will assault the staging area for the impending attack on Castle Enric. You will capture or kill all hostiles and, if possible, destroy the agricultural aircraft on the ground.
In broad daylight, you don't know how many men are there, what training they have. I'm not going to hit that target till I have a better idea of...
Zack spit on the wet ground and muttered loud enough to be heard.
Here we go. Everybody wants to be a gangster till it's time to do gangster shit.
Jenner pointed at Hightower.
Fuck you, Dad. Shouldn't you be somewhere playing golf?
Some of the men laughed at this, but Court was fixated on something else.
Hey, Brewer, were you planning on mentioning the fact that there is an agency asset at the target location?
Suzanne Brewer gave a half shrug, then spoke to the entire group.
Violator is correct. A female asset, 33 years old, hair dark brown, eyes green. You are the same team that exfiltrated her out of Thailand a few months ago, so you should recognize her. She is now an asset of ours, codename Anthem. But her current status is unknown. You have to consider her potentially hostile at this time.
Court said, bullshit. She went there to kill her dad, same as us.
All the men on Jenner's team turned to Court, unsure if they'd heard him correctly.
Brewer said, yes, as Violator said, she is the daughter of General Zakharov, the mastermind of this entire plot.
Yeah, Court said, but... Jenner broke in. But nothing. We treat her as an unknown. Disarm her, restrain her, but we won't kill her unless she poses an imminent threat.
Court could live with this, and he let it go. The argument between Brewer and Jenner about the sensibility of a daylight attack against an unknown force resumed, but the other Ground Branch men continued to kid up as if they knew they would inevitably be going into action, no matter how much their team leader protested to the suit in charge. Court took Hightower over closer to the map, and they looked at it together. Then they stepped away into the misty field, out of earshot of the others.
Court asked, "What do you think about the tactical equation?"
He deferred to almost no one on close-quarter battle tactics, but Zack Hightower had been his team leader in the goon squad, and if there was one person with more knowledge than Court on team tactics, it was Hightower.
Zack looked up at the rain. What do I think about the tactical equation? The tactical equation is a big fat bag of dicks.
Jenner's absolutely right about that.
Are you going to tell Brewer what you think?
Zack shrugged.
Nah, we got this. These are mafia goons.
It's not like we're up against Spetsnaz.
Court didn't know who in fact was there at Zakharov's staging location, but Zack had a point. So far, all the foot soldiers in this operation they'd encountered had been London-based Russian mob gangsters. Dangerous, to be sure, but no match for Special Activities Division paramilitaries. Still, he didn't mask his concern. Zack saw Court's reticence and slapped him on the shoulder.
Go big or go home, bro.
I can go home? Cool.
It's a figure of speech, Six.
You're in this shit till the end.
Well then, I guess I'll just get on the helicopter and fly into certain death.
That's the spirit.
They stepped back into the group of men in time for them to hear Brewer say,
Violator and Romantic will be folded into your team and assault alongside you.
Jenner replied,
I'd be willing to take Hightower along for the ride as long as he remembers to let the younger guys take the lead.
He looked to Court.
But I don't trust Gentry. He tends to do his own thing, and that shit won't fly on my team. Plus, look at him. He's a wreck. I don't need a wounded man watching my back.
Court didn't say anything, but Hightower stood up for him.
Six is solid. He was my door kicker for years.
Jenner just rolled his eyes.
And then he fucking shot you, Zack.
Dude, it's cool. We hugged it out, didn't we, Six?
Jenner just pointed to Court with a gloved finger.
That goofy headcase is not riding on my team.
Brewer wasn't officially in charge of the Ground Branch team, but she had cards to play to exert her authority. She said,
Jenner, I'll call Matt Hanley right now. There isn't anyone at the agency that has more respect for Violator than Hanley does.
She looked off a moment into the mist.
Believe me, I deal with the unfortunate fallout of that fact every damn day.
Looking back his way, she said,
You really think he's going to take your side?
Jenner held firm.
Call him.
Brewer did call Hanley, and 5 minutes later, Court was kidding up with Hightower and the rest of Jenner's team. He was on the mission, broken hand and all.
Jenner strapped himself into his body armor while he stood next to Gentry. He was pissed, but compliant, because there was no way to go up against the wishes of the deputy director of operations. He said,
"Okay, Violator, listen up. I want you squared away. I want you where I can see you at all times. In fact, you take the number one."
The number one was the first through the door after a breach. It was the most dangerous position in the flow.
"What was that about having the younger guys take the lead?"
Court retorted. Jenner said,
"Everybody says you're such hot shit. I want to see your ass in action."
Zack leaned forward to Jenner now.
"Hey, boss, why don't you slap a GoPro on your helmet? You're going to want to film this shit once Sierra 6 starts doing his thing."
Jenner just rolled his eyes and fastened the cummerbund of his body armor tightly around him. Court took an HK416 short-barreled rifle offered to him by one of the ground branch men, slung it across his chest, and yanked the sling strap tight. The rifle cinched up to his body, pointing down. He worried about the recoil his left hand would endure wielding the weapon, but the .223 caliber wasn't particularly powerful, so he told himself he could manage the pain. He climbed aboard the high-tech-looking helicopter, keeping his mummified hand close to his chest so he didn't bang it on anything while finding a seat amid the equipment there. Chris Travers boarded behind him. He extended a gloved hand.
"Hey, brother. How you getting on?"
Court took it with his own gloved hand.
"Older every day. How you doing, Travers?"
He shrugged.
"This shit beats a real job."
Court looked at Jenner, still by the makeshift map table, who looked back at him disapprovingly.
"Your boss doesn't like me. You might want to keep your distance for your own good."
"Walt doesn't know your softer side," he laughed.
"Dude, what in the hell happened to you? You look like you fell off the back of a bus and got ran over by a shit wagon."
Other team members climbed aboard around them now. Court said,
"Chris, promise me one thing. You see a big monster dude anywhere around the target, 6'9" or so, you shoot his ass from standoff distance. I'm not smart enough to stay out of his reach."
6'9"? Yeah, I can hit that at a mile and a half."
"You better hope you're a mile and a half away when you see him. That guy is fucking scary."
Travers swiveled his head to Court.
"You mean something scares the gray man?"
"Everything scares me. That's why I'm still here."
Zack climbed in and slapped Travers on the back.
"Christopher, ready to rock and roll?"
"Yeah, boss."
Brewer stepped up to the helo now, but she did not climb in. Zack, of course, knew she wasn't going along into combat, but he extended a gloved hand to help her aboard anyway, just to be sarcastic. She ignored it.
"I've got to get back to Castle Enric. Destroy that aircraft so I don't regret that decision,"
Hightower said.
"Yes, ma'am. We'll save all those unappreciative suits at your fancy party, no sweat. Enjoy the champagne and finger sandwiches."
She turned away and climbed into the other helo. Zack turned to Court now and shouted over the sound of the turbines spooling up.
"You know what the worst part of this shit is?"
"What's that?"
"If we all die, nobody's going to even notice I got killed. Everybody will be like, oh shit, the gray man got fragged by some Ruskies in Scotland. Nobody's gonna remember old Zack getting popped."
"Watch my back, keep me alive. Problem solved, romantic."
"Night train."
Court cocked his head.
"What's that?"
"Night train. My new code name. What do you think of that?"
"When did it change?"
"It hasn't, officially. But Matt is thinking it over."
"Good luck with that, romantic,"
Court said. He looked down at his aching left hand, the tight wrappings on it, and he thought about Zoya. Chapter 59.
As the ground branch team augmented with the two poison apple assets flew towards their target, there was an important piece of intelligence that they were missing.
Jenner and his team fully expected to encounter a sizable force of Russian Bratva gangster shooters, but they had no idea the target location also contained 30 GUR Spetsnaz-trained mercenaries. There was an incredible force multiplier effect involved in dealing with a cohesive unit of men, as opposed to a group of thugs of the same number. 30 special operators who'd trained together and had fought together in the past posed a formidable, perhaps insurmountable, obstacle to the success of the CIA paramilitary mission here. But without this knowledge, the direct action penetrator touched down behind a grove of trees 2 kilometers from the church and the airfield.
ensuring that no one at the target location could hear it. 10 men leapt out and began moving up towards their destination through light rain and heavy mist. Court was near the back at this stage. He wouldn't take the front until they arrived at the door to the church. For now, he just jogged along through the heavy vapor, holding his slung rifle up with one hand. Trudging their way through the short grass, he and the others came upon a flock of sheep. They moved through the animals, guns high in front of them. Court ran along with Hightower, Greer, Stapleton, Lorenzi, McLean, Jenners, Travers, a guy Court thought he heard someone call Partridge, and some other asshole Court didn't know at all. They made their way higher on the hill, saw the graveyard through the heavy mist in front of them, and dispersed left and right. Lorenzi and McLean were the two snipers on the team, and once they crested the rise of the hill, they dropped down behind a low stone wall, took up positions, and looked through their 416's scopes, scanning the stained glass windows of the church just 40 yards away. As Zack, Court, and the rest of the team crouched and moved through the tombstones, they slowed and took knees when they heard their headsets come alive. Lorenzi said,
"Four has a target. Top left window, armed with an AK.
McLean came over the net next.
"Seven has eyes on one combatant in the top right window. He's got a Dragunov."
Did I miss some intel giving us a heads up that the Russian mafia had snipers with sniper rifles on this op?
Court waited to hear Jenner give the order for the snipers to engage, but before he spoke, the booms of gunfire from the church sent Court, Zack, and all six ground branch men in the cemetery diving behind tombstones. A pair of masked men rose from behind grave markers, not more than 40 feet away from Court, and they raked the ground branch team with automatic fire. Partridge went down before firing a shot, and the team member Court didn't know spun away, blood ejected from the side of his head, and he fell face down in the grass. He was clearly dead. Court fired back, sending both men back to cover, but the flicker of muzzle flashes came from the front door of the church, and Court dropped flat again, slamming his injured hand on the hard earth as he did so. Behind Court, both snipers fired.
Lorenzi took down his target, then began scanning for a second, while McLean killed the man in the top right window with the Dragunov sniper rifle. But he was himself immediately shot by a second sniper, well hidden in the darkened bell turret window, half shrouded in mist.
Court shouted to Zack,
"This is well-coordinated fire. These fuckers know what they're doing all of a sudden."
"So do you. Shut up and shoot somebody."
"I'm saying this isn't Russian mob. These are Spetsnaz. Let's flank east through the cemetery. Try to divide their fire."
Zack moved over to Court's tombstone, chased by rifle rounds fired in and around the dilapidated Gothic church. He dove in behind Court and actuated his radio.
"TL, 9 and 10 request a move to the south to flank target and approach from rear."
"TL request approved," Jenner shouted back, then said, "2 and 6, see if you can flank to the north."
Jenner was ordering Travers and Greer to break away from the body of the team and begin moving off to the left, shielded by low boulders in the tall, whipping grasses of the cemetery. This left only 3 men in the fight in the graveyard itself, but attacking the structure from multiple directions would inevitably draw fire away from Jenner and the other two here. Court and Zack moved low through the grasses, out of the cemetery, and then along a driveway on the south side of the church. As soon as they made it into the open, fresh gunfire rained down from the church bell turret, kicking up rocks and splashing rainwater into the air.
"Son of a bitch," Zack said as he ran for concealment behind a parked van.
Diving into the mud, he looked back for Six. Court Gentry appeared in the air, crashed into Zack, and knocked him down. The younger man rolled on the ground, clutching his taped and splinted hand in obvious pain. Rounds tore into the van, forcing the men to press their bodies and faces lower into the muddy water and gravel. Zack said,
"Dude, you're a bullet magnet."
"I'm lucky like that."
As he rolled up to a knee and shouldered his rifle, he said,
"Zakharov snuck some Tier 1s over here from Russia. Mercs are active duty. Why would he do that? Just so they could pull security at his staging area?"
"Figure that shit out later, numbnuts. We're in a motherfucking firefight."
Court rose higher and looked down the hill at the rear of the church. In the misty distance, he saw the yellow air tractor begin its takeoff roll. He aimed at it, but before he could fire, bullets slammed into the van and exited right next to his head. A second string of 3 rounds pierced the vehicle and pounded into the back plate of his body armor.
He fell onto his stomach.
You hit?
Zack asked between the cracks of his return fire.
Negative, Court pushed himself up again. The crop duster is taking off!
Zack had shifted his rifle to aim it under the van at a side door to the church there. As he did so, he saw movement as a man in combat boots came running out.
Handle it, Six. I've got contact north.
Zack opened fire, ripping into the man's feet and sending him tumbling to the gravel drive. When he hit the ground, Zack fired once more into the masked man's head, killing him. Court now shouted,
Cover!
And went prone, positioning his broken hand on the vertical of the rifle to steady it. Zack climbed to his feet and began firing around the front of the van.
Covering!
Court aimed at the tiny yellow aircraft, already gaining speed, as it bounced along the wet grass of the airstrip. He fired a single round, then another, his hand throbbing anew with each volley. He kept shooting, aiming, trying to judge for the aircraft's increasing speed, the distance, and the bullet drop. The 416 was not a sniper rifle, but Court knew he should be able to hit a damn airplane at 600 yards or more.
But the mist was heavy, the plane kept rolling away, and it didn't look like he was going to be able to stop it.
He changed magazines with his good hand, flipped his weapon's fire selector switch to fully automatic, and re-aimed at the tiny yellow plane as it took off from the bright green grass.
Come on, Gentry,
he said to himself as he pressed the trigger, firing burst after burst as his left hand screamed in agony. Four Russian mercenaries in full body armor burst through the rear door of the church in formation, rifles swinging right and left, searching for targets. When they found no threats, they waved forward a group of people in the doorway. Fox, then Hines, then Zakharov, along with two Bratva men, all came running out towards three 16-passenger vans parked just meters from the door. Behind them, Zoya appeared, her arms tied behind her back at the elbows, and two Bratva soldiers bracketed her as she was rushed out the back door and towards one of the vans. Behind this group, a dozen more mercs in masks in the latest tactical equipment brought up the rear, scanning 360 degrees for enemy contact. Gunfire raged from the roof, from the north, west, and south sides of the church, but here on the eastern side it was clear. The sound of the accelerating air tractor carried through the mist from the south, heard intermittently between the nearly incessant shooting. Zoya watched while her father, Hines, and Fox climbed into a van, wasting no time racing off down the hill, making its own lane in the tall grasses. The other two vehicles revved their engines, their drivers already at the wheel, and Zoya was placed next to one of these while her two minders stepped up to the other. The back door was open, and inside were stacks of scuba tanks and other diving gear, as well as stacked Pelican cases, no doubt holding some other equipment for the unit. As the men began to shut the back of the van, Zoya found herself unattended for a moment. In that instant, she turned to run back inside the church. But before she could take three steps, a hand grabbed her shoulder and spun her around, leading her back to the door of the second white van. Chris Travers and Art Greer bounded around the northern side of the church now and saw a white vehicle racing down the hill in the distance. Travers pressed his transmit key on his chest.
Squirters in a white van, heading east at speed.
Jenner called back over the net immediately.
Once we suppress the threat here, we'll bring the helo up and go after it.
Travers and Greer took a few more steps towards the back of the property and saw a second, identical van racing off. Greer raised his rifle at it, but Travers stopped him.
The asset!
Greer understood. The woman from CIA might be in the vehicle, so they couldn't just rake it with gunfire. As they finally rounded the back edge of the church, they saw a third van, with several people moving around it, including a brunette woman with her arms restrained behind her back. The men at the van saw the two Americans, and they raised their weapons. Travers and Greer fell flat onto the ground and, from the prone position, expertly picked off all four men without hitting the hostage. They thought they had all the threats down, but the driver dove out of the vehicle with his short-barreled AK and aimed at the attackers at the northern side of the building. He fired at them, and then they returned fire. He raced over to a stone wall in the back garden of the church to dive behind it, but Greer took him in the left hip before he got there, spinning him to the ground and wounding him fatally. Travers changed magazines in a flash, then rose and began running over to the woman, his weapon now pointing back at the church because gunfire continued booming from inside.
Travers raced up to the woman, shouting over the raging gun battle.
Ma'am, come with me! I'm taking you to cover!
Cut my arms free, she shouted back.
I'll do it when we get somewhere safe!
I can't run like this, just cut the rope!
Travers realized the folly of standing here in the open arguing, so he pulled a knife off his chest rig and moved behind the attractive woman he'd last seen months earlier near Phuket, Thailand. He cut her free, resheathed his knife, then said,
I want you tied on my back. We're running to the wall of the church. Got it?
Got it, she replied.
Travers began running for the church 20 yards away. He'd expected to feel the presence of the female CIA asset right on his heels as he ran, but he did not. He slowed a little, concerned he'd gotten ahead of her, and then, when he made it to the stone wall, he spun around and looked back. The brunette was not behind him at all. Instead, she had climbed behind the wheel of the remaining white van. Before his eyes, the vehicle lurched forward and took off down the hill, following the tracks of the two before it. Zoya Zakharova raced down the hill, trying to catch up with the closest van, now 300 meters away or so, and barely visible in the mist. As she buckled herself in to reduce the thrashing she was taking from the rough terrain, she looked to her left. There, next to her, was a wounded man in the front passenger seat. He was a Bratva soldier, not one of the elite mercenaries who'd shown up. And as she drove on, she rifled through his body with her left hand and pulled out a CZ-75 pistol, which she placed on her lap, and a mobile phone, which she examined. When she saw the phone was locked, she used it to smack the wounded man across the face. In Russian, she said,
Hey, unlock this.
The man had been shot through the left arm, and from the blood on his mouth, she realized at least one of his lungs had been perforated by bullet fragments. He turned his head to her slowly, but said nothing. Zoya now snatched up the CZ-75 and thumbed off the safety. Pointing it at him with her left hand, she said,
Unlock it!
Reluctantly, the man did so. Zoya kept one eye out the front windshield and the other on the wounded mafia goon, and when he tapped in his code, he handed it back to her. She reached for it, turned the wheel to avoid a rainwater-filled pothole in the gravel road, then looked over to the man. He reached out and lunged at the pistol. Zoya fired 3 times across her body, knocking the Russian dead into the passenger side door. She scrolled through the man's apps. Once she found the navigation app, she checked it to see where she was in relation to Castle Enric. She knew she had to hang back so as not to be detected, but stay close enough to not lose the entourage racing away from the church. She knew her father. He wouldn't drive these obvious vehicles up to the castle. No, he would switch vehicles, do something to obscure his plan and his approach to his target obliquely. As she was thinking over her desperate predicament, the yellow air tractor flew through the air above her on her right.
She looked at it in surprise, then saw that it was trailing both smoke and fire.
As it plunged back to Earth, Zoya was relieved that the plague weapon had been destroyed, but she was still worried. She worried the Americans behind her would think their battle was won, when in truth, her father had hinted he had a different type of attack up his sleeve. She pushed down harder on the gas, increasing her speed, and the dead body slumped over into her lap. Court watched as the yellow airplane sputtered and died in the air, then began its death spiral at only 400 feet. It hit a field of heather nose down, then exploded in a ball of fire. Court pumped his fist in the air. To Zack, he said,
I shot down an airplane with a rifle.
Zack snorted.
Dude, get over yourself. It was a crop duster.
Crestfallen, Court said, It's still a plane, Zack.
Does this mean we're about to get the bubonic plague or some shit?
Pneumonic, Court corrected.
I didn't think it through that far when I started shooting at it.
Zack started moving around the van for the church.
Fuck it, Six. Let's go out in a blaze of glory before I cough up a couple of lungs.
Court followed behind him, and he and Zack entered the church, but only after notifying Jenner of their intentions to do so. The 4 able-bodied men of Jenner's team, plus Court and Zack, cleared the church over the next 10 minutes, killing 3 Russians on the ground floor and 2 more hiding in the tower. They radioed back to Castle Enric and were informed that the burning crash site would have immediately destroyed all the weaponized bacteria, so they had not been exposed to the plague.
As they looked over all the dead, inside and out, the majority of the combatants appeared to be Bratva soldiers, but a few were clearly of a different mold. Their gear was better, more coordinated and uniform, and the men looked more fit, more rugged. But no less dead. Jenner called in the direct-action penetrator helicopter, and he and his mates began treating the wounded. He had two KIA, McLean and Aronson, and two more, Partridge and Stapleton, were wounded, stable, but out of the fight. Court asked if anyone had seen Zoya. Travers said, "I saw her. She took one of the vehicles and headed off in the same direction as the others." Jenner said, "So she's with them after all." Travers countered, "She was bound when I found her. I cut her free." Again, Jenner replied, "And then she ignored your instructions and jumped in a van and drove off with her father." Court said, "Not with her father, after her father." Jenner shrugged. "She hauled ass right behind the rest of them, Gentry. That's all we know." Court and Zack were tasked with carrying the body of Aronson. Court didn't learn the man's name till after he died, towards a makeshift landing zone at the bottom of the hill on the airstrip. As they struggled with the dead weight of the operator, Court took a moment to look back to the burning wreckage of the aircraft in the distance. When they had the body at the LZ, Zack said to Court, "I'm going to call Brewer. You know what she's going to say about Anthem, don't you?" Court did know exactly what Brewer would say, but he defended her to Zack now. "Zoya is on our side."
"Good old Suzanne's not going to see that.
Zoya drugged you and ran, and then she ran again from Ground Branch. It looks bad for her." "She's on our side," Court repeated. Zack said,
"You need to stow that sentimental bullshit.
If Brewer or Hanley orders me to take her out, then that's what I'll do." Court squared off in front of the bigger man.
"Then you and I are going to have a problem."
"Again?"
"It's not me, Zack. It's you."
"Wrong, Six. That hard-on you have for her is making the rest of you soft. And soft makes you dead. Quit your job and you can be as big a pussy as you want for as long as you want. You can get a whole slew of kittens and grow flowers or whatever else it is that makes you whole. But as long as you are in this shit with me especially, you will fucking man up and do the jobs we are assigned."
"I'm not killing Zoya."
His voice lowered.
"And neither are you."
"If Brewer tells me to..."
"I'm not saying you won't try. I'm saying you'll die before you do."
The two men stared each other down, but behind them the helicopter landed, drowning out any further conversation. Chapter 60. Suzanne Brewer sat in the living room of Matt Hanley's suite at Castle Enric. His accommodations were much nicer than hers, but he was DDO, so she was not surprised or offended by this. She expected to have his job someday, or she had expected it until recently. Now she knew she'd have to extricate herself from the black ops world to have a shot at a higher position and the perks that came along with it. Together, they'd sat on the sofa and listened to Zack Hightower's voice over the satphone, talking over the rotors of the Hilo, delivering his after-action report about the attack on the church. Two Ground Branch men killed, two wounded, no sign of Zakharov or Primakov, Mars or Fox. Anthem was freed, but she immediately fled the area, and her status remained unconfirmed. None of this was good news. But there was some good news. Very good news. The aircraft, presumably carrying the bioweapon, crashed shortly after takeoff, burning on impact. So the conference was already in full swing here this morning at the castle, and those few security officials who did not know the reasons for the heightened vigilance and increase in sentries had already mentally ratcheted back their threat level, though they kept helicopter gunships in the air in case of any other aircraft flying low and close enough to pose a threat. When he was finished listening to Hightower's debrief, Hanley said, "I want Violator, you, and any of the Ground Branch men still in the fight here at the castle until we can get a fix on Zakharov." He paused. "Who's left?" Hightower said,
"Jenner, Travers, Lorenzi, and Greer are the only four up, sir."
"Okay. Have the Hilo land outside the castle walls. Suzanne will acquire security credos for you and Violator. Jenner and his men already have them. We'll set up a command center here on the third floor because this is the U.S. portion of the quarters.
and from the command center, we'll hunt for Zakharov via satellite, traffic cams, and local police.
Brewer said, Matt, is it a good idea to bring the assets here?
I want all our paramilitary operations officers and Singleton assets together, ready to go after Zakharov the moment there is a sighting. We know he's got a large security force with him. He might not have the plague weapon anymore, but he can still cause trouble for the Five Eyes conference. The ground branch men are my security detail. We fold Gentry and Hightower into their remaining numbers, and no one will notice.
He looked at the phone. Hightower was still on the speaker.
Romantic, I know Gentry is the gray man. I need you to develop the power to blend in as well.
Like a plan in the corner, sir.
Hightower hung up, and Brewer headed out of Hanley's suite to arrange for the badges for two new close protection officers for the DDO of CIA's detail. Fyodor Zakharov stood on the shoreline of an inlet on the western side of Loch Ness, outside one of four black Mercedes cargo vans he and his men had picked up in the underground garage of the Eastgate Shopping Center in Inverness.
The vans were full of equipment, scuba gear, firearms, ammunition, cases of explosives, and rolls of det cord, all transferred from the white vans that made it away from the church.
And there was one more item, a large, locked, black plastic Pelican case that sat in the back of one of the Mercedes vans. Zakharov called Fox over, and he arrived, as always, with John Hines at his back. The former general said,
Fox, I have 18 mercenaries left, and we have a total of 4 sleepers working for us on the inside of the castle.
Fox said,
And we still have 3 aerosol canisters of plague, along with all the plastic explosive, detonation cord, the acetylene unit, and ammunition.
Zakharov asked,
What about the cases of syringes loaded with the injectable antibiotics?
Fox said,
Yes, we have a full course of medicine for 30 men, more than enough.
The younger man cocked his head.
What are you planning, sir?
The men will penetrate the facility via the 13th century passage. That part is unchanged.
They will set the explosives in the subterranean levels, and then they will go upstairs and attack the Great Hall tonight at 8 p.m., when the opening formal dinner is taking place. At that time, everyone will be in one large room. The entire event will become a hostage scene. We will make some demands, release a statement. Meanwhile, the canisters will be brought into the room and discreetly released. The difficult part of this is the need to hold all the participants, or as many as we can, for 8 hours. That renders the plague fatal. Then we leave. Claim that our demands have been met. If we do that, then they will leave Castle Enric, return to their offices, and infect thousands of others over the next 10 days or so. And that's the reason to make this look like a hostage situation.
Yes.
If the biological agent is detected or seen, or even if there is any presumption it might have been used and not destroyed in the plane crash, then everyone in that building will be quarantined and given antibiotics.